My name is David Rithaswamy, and I do these seminars every once in a while here, but all over the world. So, I guess maybe we can introduce ourselves. Start from here.
My name is Joe.
Joe, yeah.
And
Emmy.
I'm Byron.
Byron.
I'm Jacob.
Jacob.
Rajendra.
Rajendra. Emma.
Joseph.
Ah, great.
Karen.
Probably better if, yes. Do we need more chairs, or would you like more chairs? We can even bring more if you feel more comfortable with chairs. You're all right there?
I'm up on the floor.
You're all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought you could just get the pipe or something.
Oh. Yes, please. Good idea. Okay. Those in the back, would it be too much if we asked you to move forward, or are you kind of comfortable there? Yeah, sure. It would help out a lot. Okay, so we're going to discuss the fire of desire, because unless you can cope with that, unless we can cope with that, what will happen to our life? A fundamental reality is that we're conscious entities, and to be conscious means we have desires. I don't think any of you will deny that you have desires. Yeah, we should think how much of our life is powered by desire, shaped by desire, whether we're conscious of it or not. Now, of course, we're aware that many people just choose to take life as it comes, so to speak, one day after another day after another day. Kind of like on automatic pilot. I'm sure you know persons who feel secure about that. Just kind of do the same thing every day, more or less, and what happens, happens. Something interesting comes my way, all right. If not, that's also all right. Probably easier to see than desire is our choices. But I find that once people can actually list their choices, then they start to see their desires. Now, according to the ancient Vedic knowledge of India, desire is the most subtle form of activity. In other words, activity is not just, you know, moving around physically. Activity is also, in its subtlest form, your desires. By desiring, you're acting. Now, we all know that a physical action causes a reaction. But how many of us are aware of the reactions to desires? It's interesting to progress in looking at your life from adding up all your choices, past, present, and future, to going at it in a more subtle way and looking at your desires. But I found that unless most people can see their choices and add them up, it's hard for them to cope with desires. Unless, like, the desire is really raging. Many of us don't even recognize our desires. I really want to go to London. Everyone can recognize a desire like that. I really want this thing. But those are just acute desires or very grossly apparent desires. Our whole life is a bag of gross and subtle desires. The problem, whatever it is, as I said, desire in of itself is subtle. So I'm hoping to provide you with a completely different way of looking at your life, instead of just a more mechanistic analysis. Well, I wanted to do this, so I did that. And in the future, I want this, so now I'm doing that. I'm seeking to provide you with a more subtle and introspective tool. Okay. What about choices? We'll start in that way. Is it a little warm in here? Do we need some air? Is that possible? Mm-hmm. You can remember when you were little kids, what is the main inconvenience of being a little kid? Which, of course, now you may take as a luxury, but when you were a little kid, you found it to be constraining. What is it? For the most part, you couldn't make your own choices. Remember how that felt. You couldn't choose what you wanted to eat. And if you had good old-fashioned parents, you couldn't choose when you went to bed or when you got up in the morning. For most of you, was it like that, or your parents kind of said, whatever? Mm-hmm. What about you, Joe? When you were a kid, could you...
It was proper bedtime, yeah.
Yeah, proper bedtime. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe except for the kids, sort of thing.
Yeah. And you just couldn't eat whatever you wanted to eat, right?
No.
What was on the table?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For you?
Mm, not too bad, but you did.
A lot of choices made for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at this stage you're dependent. I mean, you have to be. The thing is, you can't provide for yourself, so someone else has to set that.
Yeah.
Frame with that for you.
Yeah, that's a good point. I remember my mother saying, as long as you're in my house, you do it my way. You don't like it, when you're older, you get your own house.
Great.
Of course, in New Zealand, that threat is not so powerful because, you know, when you're how old, you can go on the dole when you're 17.
Yeah.
But in the States, you know, there's no dole, so it's a real powerful tool in the hand of the parents. You don't follow the rules of my home, get your own home.
Oh, Mom, how am I going to pay for that?
Well, that's your problem. Better stay home and do what I say. But here, I guess the threat is very much diminished.
But still below a certain age. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's 18-year-old. Maybe it's 12-year-old.
Hang on. When you were young, did you, pretty much your choices were made for you?
Yeah. They were, all my choices were made for me.
Mm-hmm. Go to bed this time.
Yeah.
Eat this. We're going here, we're going there. Yes, also.
And we're going to figure out still life. When watching.
Yes, I remember. What? My mother, she's a strict Christian lady, so she would even monitor the TV shows that, you know, her children watched. And the whole neighborhood would make fun of us. Your mother won't let you watch this show on TV.
This is my.
I'm in the lab watching.
Really? Was there a TV in the house?
Yeah.
But you weren't allowed to watch it.
For like news. And...
How did you feel about that when you were a kid?
I understand now why.
But just and I'm snuck over to your friend's house and
but, yeah, it. At the time it was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing. Why are you grateful now?
Because I hate you.
I just see. I remember when I was a teenager, my mother arranged me to go to a one of these boarding schools in the mountains, modeled after, you know, British prep schools or whatever, you know. And, you know, it was full of super rich kids. And 175 students, classes of four. Class 6 days a week. All boys. I never hated it. 3 hours from the nearest city. It's like going to a school in, where would be a good equivalent? Tekapo? Yeah. Hours from Christchurch, you know. You know, yeah, this is the middle of nowhere. I hated it. But then, now when I look back at the situation, I see it kept me out of trouble in the city. And now I look back on it, actually it was a beautiful place. It had its own ski hill and everything, you know. Its own ice rink, and all the facilities are there. But when I was a teenager, I hated it. Every 3 months they would ship in some girls from an old girls school an hour away for a evening, they called it mixer.
Perfect.
Now, actually, I'm grateful.
Structured and organized.
It kept me out of a lot of trouble. So it is. It's amazing. Things we felt were restricting us, now we find out were actually having a positive effect. You had choices made for you?
Strict choices. And even to what clothes to wear.
No?
Yeah.
What? Wide open?
Sorry?
Yeah. Choices made for you? Or?
Yeah.
And you?
Yeah, like, say if you wanted to go to the movies, it was mum's choice if she was going to pay for you or not, or, you know, if it wasn't like you could just click your fingers and have the money to do so, you know, so that was mum's decision.
Did she choose the kind of movie you could?
Nah, mum was pretty flexible, actually, with that kind of thing. She didn't want me watching pornos and all, but I mean, like, apart from that, you know.
So, when you were a little kid and everyone was making choices for you, what were you looking forward to in the future?
Freedom.
And what did that freedom mean? You made all the choices, right? When will that day come? Do you remember when you first got your situation away from your parents' choices? You could choose when you're going to wake up. You can choose when you're going to go to sleep, what you're going to eat, who you're going to wake up with, what to do with your money. Do you remember looking forward to that?
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be like such a defining moment, right? Now, the age that most of you are, so many look back at those so-called imprisoned years when others were making choices and thinking, oh, the pleasure of childhood, the innocence of childhood. But when you're that age, the child, you think, oh, why can't I be like the adults? They can do whatever they like. They can make their own choices. You become an adult, you think, oh, childhood, how innocent. How pristine. Sounds like a bit of an illusion, doesn't it? The grass is always green on the other side. All right, so it's easy to see our life in terms of choices. You can make a list of choices that you really feel affected your life in the past. And you can make a list of choices that you're going to make now that are in the future that are going to really affect your future. and try to see how much freedom you have, worthwhile freedom you have in your life. So once we get this choice thing understood, then we're going to move to desire. Now I know the choice part is easy, but it's still, it's interesting. What I'd like you to do, what we normally do here for those who've been before, he asks you to write things down on the paper, but don't put your name on it. And then we'll collect the papers and pass them around to everybody. You know, it's always interesting to hear someone read your things without knowing who you are and seeing their reaction. That way you get a measure of protection and security, you're not being exposed. That's all right? Yeah, that's okay? All right, we have enough papers for about... How many papers does each? Okay, just one?
No, it's going to be a full each.
So, if you could write on your first paper, the major decisions that you've made in the past, which you feel are responsible for your life as it is now. That's one thing. The major decisions you made in the past, which you can see are responsible for the way your life is now. And the second thing is the major decisions you're making right now or will make very soon that you think are going to really shape your life in the future. Choices. The two categories to this. Okay. Choices you've made in the past, which have really shaped, that you see now, really shaped the way your life is now. And number two, choices you're making now or in the near future that are going to really affect your future. Okay. So, first let's hear the category of decisions made that really, choices made that really affected your life. What's that?
Choices made in the past. The choice to travel and the choice to have a baby.
Okay.
Change to vegetarian.
Okay. Alright. Is this one thing on the list? That's all?
Yes.
Okay.
To decide what to do with looking out of time free again.
Okay.
Past decisions, make money, leave school, find work, buy a car, leave home, live with who I want.
Okay.
What am I reading?
Past decisions made.
Past decisions made,
yeah.
University, whether or not to go and where they want to go, okay. Leaving everyone I know for an extended period of time.
Okay. Can you speak louder, please?
Having gone to London for an overseas experience has given me independence and courage without asking anyone for advice. I no longer need to lean on or depend upon anyone.
Deciding to finish high school, deciding not to go to university, deciding to be on the dole for a few years, the friends I've hung out with, the woman I've been in relationships with, deciding to smoke pot, and deciding to travel.
Complete my degree, although maybe this was actually my first one. Drop out of professional world to work on orchard. Leave my last girlfriend.
Learn piano, going to yoga, smoking, diet, look inside myself to talk to people.
Stopping addictions, getting a divorce, traveling and living in the States, attending university and getting a degree. University, I guess, and getting a degree.
To be content and alone is if it is required, to follow my own will and my own interests rather than what others think is good for me, and to travel and therefore be open to new experiences and societies.
Okay. So we hear a lot about to finish school or not, to travel or not, to be with this partner or not. What else? What common ones?
Meeting the people around you, talking to the people around you.
How do you think these things have really become important in terms of the main thrust of your life? I'm just asking in general. Does it really affect your internal development? Okay, I finished school, I didn't finish school, I traveled, I didn't travel. Do you really feel these kind of things have gotten into the essence of your being, whatever that is? To leave this girlfriend or to get a divorce? I mean, has it really, like, got into the innermost chambers of your life, whatever that is?
To me, some of the decisions I've made in my life have really affected my my future. Even the people that are alive and stuff like that.
So how is how would it affect your future?
When I left the place I moved to, I discovered that I had these fears of losing everyone that I knew, which was obviously true, but it didn't actually get to a certain level, I think.
So that went really deep.
Yeah.
So most of you, whatever you wrote, you really feel it affected you really deep inside. It made a huge impact on your innermost psyche. For now.
Well, we're talking about the past.
Yeah, but decisions you made in the past that affected
us now.
Yeah.
Like, it could have gone either way. Like, even if you made the other decision, you still would have lived the same. Maybe the same decision later on.
It's just interesting to make a situation with this at the time. Because something which seemed so huge, right then when the decision was made, and seemed like the whole world, you look back on years later and was tiny, it was small.
It's an interesting point. So, what is it that produces the sense of what do you call it, urgency, or not urgency, but wow, this is such a tough decision, my whole life is hanging in the balance, and then years later, oh, that's a big deal, you know. But, you know, okay, if I'd done this or that, you know, life goes on.
Because you're uncertain what that decision's going to bring.
So then later, it's water under the bridge, yeah?
Yeah, well, depending on what outcomes come from.
What makes us feel that the decisions, the choices, when we're about to make them, are like life and death? And then years later, someone mentions traveling. You went to London without asking anyone's advice. I can just imagine you took, well, I'm going to London, I'm not going to talk to anybody and get their experiences, I'm going myself. And so it's like a dramatic moment. But then, maybe years later, you look back and say, big deal, you know?
I guess because the decision's been made. At the time, it's taking up all your attention, you know. And like a lot of the legal stuff you have to do, it's taking the time away from that because you're thinking that it's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
When you look back at it in the future, for good or bad, you've already made the decision.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you think about it, it's not hard anymore.
But the outcome, I mean, was the outcome so crucial?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was so crucial that you left this girlfriend or you got this divorce. It was crucial.
I've had experiences like that. It was really crucial.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And your life took a significant turn, a major turn, because of this decision.
Yeah.
Of course, probably to properly evaluate, you have to really know where you want your life to be headed. And most people don't really know that. They steer from day to day, or year to year, or five-year plan at the most. But where is your whole life heading toward? We'll do that later. Okay. Now, what do we have for the second category? Decisions that you're going to make now or in the near future that are going to affect your future.
Choices now. Move to a new country.
Mm-hmm. There's stuff can never be great will happen.
Sorry?
So there's stuff can never be great will happen.
Whether or not to move to San Francisco. Whether or not to get married eventually.
To stop studying a subject that I love, because I know that there was never a degree I would love more than not.
Yeah. To stop or stop?
A little bit of ambiguity.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Future decisions, make money, pay bills, live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And be happy.
Okay.
What career to pursue, where to live, the city, states, or country, where my goals are for the future.
None.
Okay.
Big decision whether to marry this woman I care for. Decision to be more disciplined in my life in areas of importance. Decision to do extensive travel.
Continue in my current job. Prefer more time over normal. How committed I will be to spiritual endeavor, whether I should register my motorbike or not. Future choices is build a place, help people, invent, improve body, mind, and stop cigarettes.
Yeah, that could have stopped. Cigarettes could affect your future.
Become a detached materialistic thing, being vegetarian, using no adaptive products.
Using no?
I'm sorry, addictive products.
To make my own direction with work and to seek happiness and clearness of mind.
I noticed quite a few mentioned traveling. I'm just curious, why does traveling seem to be such a defining choice?
It's something that you really want to do. You really want to experience. You don't just want to be in one. At the end of your life, say, "Oh, I just live in one country," and you know, you want to be able to say, go out and say you've seen the world and be yourself and know what's out there, you know.
Anyone done a lot of traveling and really felt it was a defining experience?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was it? You just came back, huh?
A lot of people say that New Zealanders suffer from geographical isolation. Mm-hmm. Could be that.
Mm-hmm. You just came back from it? Yeah?
Yeah, I've traveled three or four times, sort of quite majorly for a year, 2 years at a time.
And it's really like gotten into the inner core of your being?
No, I don't think it's probably done that. It's just probably more that the life experience I have gained from it in my own life has been productive.
Like what could you?
Just different cultures, everything from, you know, actually living the lifestyle of the people in the country. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't go as a tourist, you actually?
No, I was living.
Roll up your sleeves and got into it, or in Cambodia or something. By the way, it's interesting for me to hear these things about traveling because I've been doing intercontinental traveling for 25 years today, so I'm just curious about the glamour that people see in traveling after 25 years on every continent, you know. It's interesting hearing others' perspectives, you know. You were saying you felt sure traveling, like...
Yes. To me, a lot of it is getting away. I mean, particularly in this... But yeah, the line of work, like the software, it's very intense and involved in this very small area. And to actually get a break from that, every couple of years, and just for a few months, just completely forget about the rest of your life and be open to just experience and being it's a really good thing.
So it's more like...
I believe that I take that experience back and it's actually beneficial to the even though it's not directly related.
Anyone else who's like traveling is just like really shaped your whole inner being?
I've only been overseas once, but the one time I did it, I went to Australia and I had the most amazing time. It was really amazing. And I came back feeling all the better for it.
Transformed internally?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not sure I'm going again if I can, but...
And for the people, the friends you make as well. I've made really, really decent friends, you know, that I wouldn't have met if I didn't get out of my hometown. Probably match for the rest of my life, you know?
You sure?
Oh, a few of them will, yeah. All right.
Okay. So, we finished with everyone's... Everyone read or what the future choice is. I'm wondering, but I don't want to be premature. I'm wondering... How is it possible to evaluate our life if we don't know what is the destination we're heading toward? It seems then that, you know, you're forced to just evaluate things piecemeal. Well, yeah, this was a good decision, I think. But you don't know in relation to what? You know what I mean? Yeah, it was good that I decided to go to university. It was good that I decided to get a divorce. But what's all this in relation to? Are these just isolated events? What is your whole life lived in reference to? I would think we'd have to start thinking in that direction. Otherwise, how do we get a grip on our own life? Yeah, I think this is a good decision. Yeah, I think that is life-defining. In order to get an overview on our own life, get a grip on it, it seems we have to have some kind of understanding. What is my ultimate goal? But we don't want to get too much into that right now. We will. Let's move to desires now. The most subtle form of activity, according to the ancient Vedic knowledge of India, desire. Bhagavad Gita will teach you, this is a classic text of India, Bhagavad Gita, that because you are an eternal conscious entity, you have desires. A stone, conventionally speaking, doesn't have desires. Only conscious, sentient entities have desires. Your whole situation in this life is the product of desire. Not only desire in this life, but also desire in your past life. If you start to look at your existence as a product of desire over maybe countless births, then you start to get a feel for how powerful desire is. You know what it's like when you consciously recognize your desires. I want this. I've got to have that. Some of you can remember. You really had a big desire. I've got to travel. I've got to go to university. I have to be with this person. Remember what that feels like? Mm-hmm. It's like you're still working in the duty-free shop. Mm-hmm. So you see desire all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does it look to you? I visited her in her shop. Just check out the scene. Like a real emporium of desire, you know? Big kind of... What kind of displays do you call them? Big electric photo displays of whiskey bottles and perfume bottles and, you know. from the viewpoint of the store manager, how does the desire thing manifest to you?
Yeah, it is desire. It's desire for luxury goods. It's desire for... getting things without paying tax, without paying government tax.
Well, that's part of it, really?
Yeah, that's a duty free, yeah, mm-hmm. So it's...
You feel you got one over on the government?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Really? I never knew that, really?
Yeah, because we have 5% GST for 100 years, so everything's minus that plus quite a bit more. Mm, but like cigarettes and that, there's huge tax on cigarettes. If you buy them in a dairy, if you get them from us there, I know. It's a good comparison of probably $2, $1 a packet to $9 a packet. Mm. It's that big. Cigarettes is the biggest saving. Mm. Yeah.
So you do a big business with cigarettes?
Very much.
But only people Kiwis who are going overseas can...
Or anyone who's traveling.
Or what?
Both ways, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you just came back?
Yeah. Both ways. Departures and arrivals.
If you have arrived, then you can just go
to... You have to pre-order it with me, though.
Ah.
You can't come into my store and buy it.
Ah.
You have to pre-arrange it.
While you're overseas?
No, while you're before you go. Or you could do it overseas, yes. You just phone us up, yes.
Ah, I see. I didn't know that was a big part of it, you know. I got away without paying tax. Amazing. Well, you know, you got to pay for the dole somewhere.
That's right.
So, that's one thing I didn't think about, you know, that you got one over on the government. But what else, though? Desire for luxury goods.
That's right.
What's that like?
When I see it in people.
Yeah, what does it look like? Desire for luxury goods. I don't think anyone here would admit you have a desire for luxury goods, would you? Any? Yeah, one. Okay. Anyone? Yeah? The desire for luxury goods?
Well, like I like my
spoons. That's a different way of putting it. Come on, say it. Luxury goods. It changed the words, and you know, it all nice things. Now let's use the more stark graphic vocabulary. Desire for luxury goods. So what she said. Maya, you have desire for luxury goods.
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But not for
any
good reason.
Well, that's the whole point of right? No good reason. Are you have luxury goods? You're high for luxury goods.
Like you get a full job one day, and and put a boat on the back and go travel around Australia in it.
Yeah.
I suppose that's it. They can have fishing equipment and where you are. That's fully luxury goods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you that? Sigh for luxury goods.
Yeah.
Like what, Victor?
I just
lost it. Okay. So they come into your shop. Mm-hmm. You see desire written on their face.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is it, you know?
Oh, it's sort of. It's temptation. It's a big sort of wow, you know? Yeah, in their eyes, yeah.
Temptation for what?
For buying them, for spending money. Well, we're tempting them to spend their money. I suppose when we offer them the discounts, then they go, I consider getting one, get three type thing. So, you know, you can see it ticking over in their minds, yeah.
One instead of, like three bottles of scotch?
Yeah, you get discounts, At the moment, yeah, we've got discounts, great discounts. Not product knowledge tonight.
So I'm just trying to understand what actually do they want?
They want a good deal for a cheap price, and satisfaction of knowing that they don't have to pay the government tax and they are getting it a lot cheaper than their Mr. Jones who lives next door who has to pay retail for it. So they're getting it tax-free, duty-free.
Yeah, so they don't have to pay a retail price, so they actually bulk up while they're going overseas.
Ah.
And they, you know, they can get Christmas presents or whatever, or presents for the future for people.
Ah.
Yeah.
So it's not simply minus the GST, it's also minus a significant savings also.
Yes, yes.
But when I went to your store, I mainly just saw, as far as I remember, it was just whiskey and cigarettes.
No, it's fragrance and cosmetics.
Oh, that's what the perfume.
Cameras.
They buy all that kind of thing?
Yeah, fancy cameras.
But as she says, special tax on those alcohol and cigarettes, on the GST.
Oh, I see. And perfume, is it special tax on perfume?
Yeah.
There is. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Special tax on perfume?
Well, there's a 12.5 on it.
Yeah,
but we're like, I don't know, say a bottle of Kurtz would probably cost 120 and we could sell it for maybe not 85,
right.
90.
Right.
Yeah. So it's GST plus more.
Yeah.
I see. And who buys the perfume? The ladies directly, or the men buy it for the ladies? Of course, now they're putting out perfume for men, right?
Yes. Both.
Both.
Mm.
So how do you sell perfume to, you know?
Me.
To anyone, you just kind of... This is the latest fragrance.
Yes. This is the latest fragrance, yeah.
I mean, have any of you ever gone up to someone and, ooh, that's the latest fragrance? Have any of you done that? But I guess it gives you a psychological boost to know you're wearing the latest fragrance, is that it?
Ooh. If it suits the skin, yes.
Hi. Any other examples, like, you know, that we, so we can get our grip on this desire thing. Anyone else?
Desires don't have to be materialistic either. I think sexual desires, do you mean, or is it...
What do you mean by materialistic?
I mean, like, luxury goods and cars and home, nice home, and whatever else. That's what I see as materialistic.
And what's exempt from that?
What's exempt from it?
Yeah, what desires aren't materialistic?
Sex, I suppose. Yes.
How would you exempt that?
How do I exempt it?
Why is it not materialistic?
Because it's not, because they're people, they're not, a product or something that's non-living or whatever.
Ah, so your standard of what's materialistic, what's not, is that, are you like connecting to something that's alive?
Sorry, say again?
If you're connecting with something that's living, then it's not materialistic.
Yeah, that's how I understand it, yeah. I don't know if that's the way it is, but I see material possessions as like boats and
objects.
Yeah, that's a little cool. Yeah.
Men don't treat women quite often as objects?
Oh, if there's respect involved with that person and you're friends with that person as well, then not, you don't own the person, you can't possess a person.
But you utilize the object.
Utilize.
You interact with the object. It's interesting, in Bhagavad Gita, it would help you to understand this better. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that you have senses, and the senses are going for sense objects. So, whether that sense object is perfume, or someone's flesh, or a car, or a boat, we still are all in the category of sense objects. Okay. And your senses are hungry for sense objects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that.
Right.
Yeah.
Any other examples of desire? Think when you really were like alive with desire, burning with desire. What was it about? I got to go climb a mountain.
So when you were talking before about what's material and what's not, so like the desire to be better at something, is that a desire or is that a material thing? Like if I desire that
I'm not always late to everything I do. Is that a material design? Or
what is your purpose in getting being on time?
Because it's like it's more respectful and everyone else is on time for me, so I should do the same. Make it.
Sounds like a cultural obligation.
Yeah.
You go to India or Latin America and you see what the time schedule is.
Maybe you're talking more about considering the
thing. Yeah, like,
yeah.
Well, I live in this culture, so I want to be better at
punctuality.
Yeah. Right. Is that
material? Why don't we leave aside this whole thing about what's material and what's not material for now. Well, we can bring it up later, but okay. We have one more exercise for today. I want you to take a moment of silence and think about this. Write on your papers. On the Yeah, but I think we better use another sheet.
Yeah.
We're trying to get our fingers on this thing called desire. And then we'll close by trying to discuss the fire of material desire and the fire of spiritual desire. But let's just get our hands on this subtle, powerful thing known as desire. Take a moment of silence and give yourself permission to have all that you desire. And then write down, what are these desires? Give yourself permission to have all that you desire. Uncork it. Yes! What would it be? Yeah, yes, that boat, yes. Here I am in the boat. Whatever. Here I am with her or him or give yourself permission to have all that you desire. Once you give yourself permission, feel those desires. I permit myself. Now what is it? It's like you've walked into Joe's duty-free shop of life.
So annoying.
Yeah. No GST. Let's try to unleash this desire monster so we can get a better look at it. You're unfettered now. You're unchained. Desire. You feel your heart start to pound. Yes. This is it. These are the things I want. Okay, now we're going to hear, hopefully, the desires unleashed. Feel the power. All right, you can start.
Okay. To be the best guitarist in the world.
Okay.
To be distinguished and inspire those around me. To have the opportunity to love someone intimately. To push the envelope of what is possible in the industry I work in, to have stable friendships.
Mm-hmm. Wealth, happiness, and love and family.
Wealth,
happiness, and family.
Endless money.
Endless money.
Fast cars.
Okay. We want this honesty. Mm-hmm.
Happiness, satisfaction, and something. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. All right,
it's a sideways, but I don't understand what that word means.
Okay.
My flow would be to have a Mitsubishi FTO and race it on the motorway, showing off for my friends.
Okay. I desire to be at the stage where I don't have anything I desire.
I don't have anything I desire.
That's interesting. Women, acquired freedom, skills, knowledge, energy, the world, free, nice emotions, myself and others, my peace, respect, learn to forget, food, air, and the food.
What was the first one?
Woman.
Okay, we got the cars, we got the girls.
I'm going to be sure.
Yeah. Speak loud, please.
That's a home on a beach, holiday home in the Alps, to travel where I like, eating all sorts of yummy foods, partying in various cultures, abundance of money for myself and family and friends. All the toys, jet ski, boat, toy, etc. A loving partner and family, soulmate, to study and be in a career of my choice, being with women sexually, to do all sorts of sports, bungee jumping, laughing, skydiving, and freedom to do what I want when I want.
I don't think I would want to have all of my desires fulfilled. There would be nothing more to strive for. That thing which you have is that thing which you used to want.
I desire to be happy with what I have now. I desire to have faith in what I know I should believe. I desire the strength to control my ill disciplined mind.
Calmness, contentment, peacefulness, spiritually connected partner, work in a caring environment.
The desire to know what I want.
The desire for freedom. From having to work for a living. From anxiety, fear and depression. From desire and to be free from wanting things and to be content.
All right, well, pass out these Bhagavad Gita's. You can share them. And then we'll just read something and then we'll launch into the final phase of our discussion. Keeping in mind all these desires that you heard. Okay, let's turn to page 297. Alright, we'll do text 22. I'll read the Sanskrit. You don't have to worry about that. Yehi samsparsha jabhoga dukkha yonaya evate adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. So we turn over to the translation. Who'd like to read that?
An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures had a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them.
Anyone like to read the purport? Bruce?
Material sense pleasures are due to the contact of the material senses,
which are all temporary because the body itself is temporary. The liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary. Knowing well the joys of transcendental pleasures, how can a liberated soul agree to enjoy false pleasure? I'd like to be able to read the next bit.
In the Padma Purana, it is said, Ramate yogino nante satchanande chiratmani iti rama padenaso param brahma vidhiyate.
The mystics derive unlimited transcendental pleasures from the Absolute Truth, and therefore the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, is also known as Rama.
In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, it is said, Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke kastan kaman arhate vidbhujam ye tapo divyam putraka yena saptam shajed yasmad brahmasokyam tanantam.
My dear sons, there is no reason to labour very hard for sense pleasure while in this human form of life. Such pleasures are available to the stool eaters, hogs. Rather, you should undergo penances in this life by which your existence will be purified, and as a result you will be able to enjoy unlimited transcendental bliss. Therefore, those who are true yogis or learned transcendentalists are not attracted by sense pleasures, which are the causes of continuous material existence. The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped by material miseries.
Hi. So, if we were to evaluate our desires using this perspective, how would things be? Tough? Spartan?
They wouldn't have as much importance as what we thought they did.
I know.
That would.
An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and end, so the wise man does not delight in them. We were speaking before about the senses. The body has senses. According to the standpoint of Vedic knowledge, when you talk about body, you're talking about a collection of senses. This is a kind of view that's not prevalent in Western thinking. People just think, I have a body. They don't realize automatically body means a collection of senses. And the senses, as we said before, are pursuing sense objects. The nose wants fragrances, the ears want sound, the eyes want to see form, the tongue wants to taste, and the skin wants to feel. Touch sensations. So this is what powers our life. Then you have the mind. From the Vedic viewpoint, the mind is also a sense. You know how to feel things with your mind. It's more subtle, but still it's like a sense.
Well, so, say for example you love mathematics.
You
love mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't have a form in the physical world. If that's another attachment.
Mind.
Yes.
The mind likes, you know, groping with these
figures.
Yeah. Just like a hand grasps a fruit, the mind grasps mathematical equations. Therefore, yes, you get a lot of mileage out of seeing the mind as a sense.
Is that knowledge as a whole, then not just mathematics, that's just knowledge as a whole?
Yes. If the knowledge is concerning material things, then it's the province of the mind. Truly spiritual knowledge, that's something else. But still, even in dealing with truly spiritual things, your senses are involved. But it just may be that something else is also involved. So, okay. We're talking about the senses pursuing sense objects. Whether it's someone's body or whether it's the new Mitsubishi or whatever. whether it's unlimited wealth. You want money to buy things. Things and influence. Will these desires satisfy you? Will you feel fulfilled if you get these things? What we're reading here is that no, because such things have a beginning and end. Therefore, why take pleasure in something that you're going to lose? That's why I was asking you, what is the background against which you're evaluating your life? Things come and go, traveling, school, partners, job. Which direction is your life heading? What's the ultimate destination of your life? Only then can you evaluate your life. Otherwise, it's good luck, bad luck, who knows? I'll give you an example. My father just told me. He was a young man in the 40s, late teenager in the 40s, and World War II was still going on. So he took a test to be a pilot, you know, fighter pilot. And like, he came out number one in a city of 5 million people. So they took, you know, he was 18 or so, 19, you know, and you know, a fighter pilot getting the award, you know. So at about 30, one of the top scorers of the Army gathered them all together. At that time, the U.S. Army was running the Air Corps, as they called it. So, you know, they were going to ship them off to a special Air Force training base. This is like in the last months of the war, last year of the war, World War II. So, out of 30, you know, 28 were immediately dispatched. And it was just my father and another guy left, you know. Wait, well, okay, where's our orders? When do we, you know, get sent to the training base and, you know, and get into the war, fly those planes? So my father kind of looked at the other guy also who hadn't been dispatched yet, and they both came to realization at the same time. Hey, you know, this is 1944 in the USA. We're both a bit brown. You know, and all the other 28, you know, they were a bit pale. What's going on here? So my father, you know, he was kind of a, how should I say, he didn't like taking things sitting down, so he went up to the the officer in charge of dispatching, you know, said, okay, we've been waiting for our orders, 28 guys already went, just me and this other guy, you know, when do we get to, you know, go to the base, you know, for getting training, you know, getting the war? And so the officer kind of went, now, you know, the war, it's in its waning moments, and, you know, we hope that, you know, it's going to be wrapped up pretty soon, and, we just don't have a quota right now for pilots from persons of your, persons of your, My father just looked at him. He said, okay, I get it. Now listen, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go fight for the Germans. At least they're honest. So, they told him, look, you know, we'll be honest with you. You want to get into the war, you want to get into the army, you know, just... You got a couple of choices. Do you want to be a cook? Do you want to be a maintenance man? So I went, wait a minute, I just scored number one in a, you know, city of 5 million, you know? And, you know, what's going on here? The other guy was also left behind. He was kind of more submissive. You know, he was telling my father, hey, you know, that's just the way it is, you know. What can you do, you know? It's just, you know, it's the way the system is. And, so anyway, so my father just told him, forget it, you know, forget it, just, you know, cancel my enlisting in the armed forces, just forget it, you know, you know, I'm going to fight, I'll fight for the Germans. So, what happened? He thought he had bad luck.
Yeah.
Discrimination. But then what happened was the 28 pilot candidates of, you know, of the lighter type skin, they went to their pilot training base, but then suddenly the Battle of the Bulge broke out in Europe, and the Germans were mounting a mighty counteroffensive. So at the last minute, those 28 guys who were heading for the pilot training school were shipped to the front lines as infantry soldiers, and they didn't come back. So, good luck, bad luck, how do you evaluate? So unless you know what the ultimate outcome of your life is, how do you evaluate what's a good desire, what's a bad desire? What's the standard? How's it all going to wind up? Let's say, Joey, let's say you got 30 more years left. And then what? Where are you heading? How do you evaluate your life in terms of where it's moving toward? Only that.
I would say how much unresolved business do you have to fulfill?
Okay. Let's say you have a lot of unresolved business.
Yes.
Then?
Well, if you. This is the purpose of your up towards death. To fulfill that unresolved business, you know, maybe if it's relationships or things that haven't been said.
Well, fulfilled or unfulfilled, you're moving on. Now, what are you moving on to? Let's say you've got that boat, you know, you're traveling Australia, you're fishing. And then?
Then you pass over. Because when your physical life ceases, you know?
Yeah, what's the plan?
Well, to enjoy life for what it's worth and make the most of it.
And then?
Then go to the spirit world and reincarnate and come back and
do it again. Sounds pretty convenient then. No, I like it. It's honest, man, you know. Anyone else? What's, I mean, how do you? Let's say, Bruce, you've got, 30 years max, generally speaking, left, 25 years. Well, so where's it all, you know? And then what, you know? What would you say?
Maybe I'll...
So here's the barrier in evaluating our desires, our choices. Now you had this experience of feeling your deep desires, your cravings, yes. The Mitsubishi, yes. The woman, yes. Whatever. But then, you're going to hit a brick wall. So this verse is pointing that out. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. Why sources of misery? Why is it that what the senses contact is a source of misery? Because it's temporary. So ultimately, something that's temporary is going to cause you problems. You'll still have the desire for this temporary thing, but the thing itself will have crumbled. And sooner or later, your very body, which has the senses, will crumble. And then what? So, in this verse, Krishna is pointing out that a wise person has better things to do, better things to delight in. A liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary. Knowing well the joys of transcendental pleasures, how can a liberated soul agree to enjoy false pleasure? So this text, this verse is pushing you toward tasting spiritual pleasure. Now, that also involves desire. I'd like to leave you with this point until Monday, for those of you who will be here Monday. Spiritual desire is far superior to material desire. Material desire is just a shadow, a glimmer of the power of spiritual desire. Because spiritual desire is for things that don't have a beginning or an end. You're dealing with a completely different energy. Material energy includes anything that has a beginning and end. So if your life is really going to unlock the hidden potential, you've got to connect with the spiritual reality. That should be the quest. Therefore, you have this very graphic verse quoted. My dear sons, there's no reason to labor very hard for sense pleasure while in the human form of life. Such pleasures are available to the stool eaters, hogs. In India, pigs roam around. They literally eat the excrement in the streets. They actually like it. They get very fat like that. That's why the example is given. Such pleasures are available to the stool eaters, hogs. Rather, you should undergo penances in this life by which your existence will be purified. And as a result, you'll be able to enjoy unlimited transcendental bliss. We've got to connect with something else. That's the direction our life should be moving in. And then, we can properly evaluate the choices, the desires of this life. So how do we get information about the overall direction that our life should be moving in? Rather than just, you know, bouncing from one material sense object to another. It's like you see people come in the duty-free shop. You've got your own like matrix of illusion going on there in your duty-free shop. So everybody's got their own matrix of illusion. How do you get out of it? And what is there once you get out of it, if you do? Rare it is that anybody gets out, and once you do get out, then what? Let's say you do decide to take the red pill. Then what?
The unknown.
So how do we find out about the unknown? Actually, it's a good point. Even our material life is unknown. What are we? What is the nature of the self? From the material point of view, that's unknown. Scientists can't tell you, in scientific terms, what the self is. They'll tell you what they may believe, but they can't give you a scientific understanding of what the self is. They'll just say, we think it's like this, and in 10 years we'll have some proof. Scientists cannot tell you what consciousness is. So therefore, even in your material life, you're dealing with unknowns. So my point I'd like to leave you with for tonight is that in order to deal with this very explosive thing called desires, we really need more information. Otherwise, our desires can really be taking us to strange places, and we can't evaluate it now because we don't have any general overview. Just, ooh, this feels like a good desire, yeah. Ooh, yeah, but, you know, compared to what? What's the standard? And are we supposed to kill all of our desires, and that's perfection? How do you live desirelessly? Someone wrote that they have the desire not to have desire. To want to be desireless is also a desire. But you never can escape from desire. So therefore, we have to decide what are the best desires to have. You cannot...
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say, could you have material and spiritual desires? Could you have both of them?
certainly you can have a mixture, but if one thing is better than the other, why not have the best all the time?
And how do you go about getting on that path?
Monday. All right, for those who are coming Monday, we'll continue this on Monday. We're going to deal with assuring yourself that it's safe to fulfill your heart's wishes. And then we'll question that security and safety. And anyway, I'll leave the rest for a surprise. Okay.
Well, thank you for coming tonight. Yeah.
Hope to see as many of you as you can on Monday. And we'll move into deeper waters on Monday. Say, so just wanted to stir things up and get things moving.
Can I just ask one question? If material senses that have a beginning and an end, what if you were content with them, with those desires in that moment in time, and then you allowed to be detached and allowed and respected that they do have an end, and you learn to detach them? So you're not really living in misery then with that desire. If you accept that they do have an end, then you can allow that to happen and enjoy them while they are in the moment.
But there's a reaction. You got to pay the price. Karma. Every action has a reaction.
But what if they
you like to fish.
Yeah.
So that means in your next life, someone's going to be fishing for you. Everything has to balance out. Yeah. Not that the fish are just waiting here for you to for your hook, you know. You're interfering with, you know. So that means nature has to balance out. In your next life, someone's got a fish for you. You got to experience what you did to the fish. Even you might say, well, it's all temporary, you know. The fish body's my body, but still you have to get a reaction.
From that.
From that? Yeah.
But what if it's not hurting anyone?
How do you know? How do you know?
But what if driving a four-wheel drive down and checking out this beautiful scenery of the landscapes? You know, that's a desire.
What powers the four-wheel drive?
Well, say it was going on water.
Find me the four-wheel drive that powered by water. No, you've got to take part in the Middle East karma. Yeah, everything has to be fair.
It's all connected.
Yeah, it's all connected.
Yeah.
It's all a big connected web of responsibility.